This is the August 2019 all-day sitting in Springwater. I was asked if at the very beginning of the talk whether I could say, "Can you hear me?" There's someone, at least one person, who is hard of hearing, and I said I would try to be extra considerate to keep the voice up. It's not something that comes naturally for this person, and in fact, it can give a sense of, am I yelling? And maybe, relatively speaking, that's the case. But the conditioning here, growing up, was to not speak up like that. It would be sort of connected with kind of acting out, which was not looked well upon. Let's just put it that way. So, but we're not the conditioning. We're not the image we have of ourselves, of each other, in depth we're not our history, the conditionings may be likely different for this person than for the neighbor sitting here, each of us. Even at this moment, the senses themselves may operate differently, the hearing more or less acute for me or for you. The body may be more or less free of pain or numbness in the feet. Eyesight weaker or stronger for one or the other of us, but the awareing, the lighting up, to put it a different way, of what is here . Does that matter so much? Or is that the important thing? It's not a thing, but that there be some open listening, not just with the ears, but with the whole being. wholeness, undividedness, all these words, what are they pointing to? Seeing that the picture of Tony Packer on the sheet that informs the, what is it, commemoration or celebration or memorial of 5 years since her passing, it reminded me of the last time my wife Lisa and I saw Toni, where she was still awake, conscious, and it was in, I guess it was a nursing home. Is that the And we walked into the room. She was kind of propped up in the bed and eyes closed. I wasn't sure if she was asleep. But she opened her eyes, saw us there, and she said, "Isn't it amazing?" And I said, "What is amazing? What do you say?" And she said, "It's amazing that we're here." Or we could say that there's here-ness, presence, because we can't do it. And I'm not saying that's what she was implying. I'm just looking at it now. We can't do it. It's not a product of this me circuit. But for a moment of what I call this me, self-centered, occupied circuit, it's quiet. It's not, we're not in the driver's seat, so to speak. What is here, as it is, is sufficient. And not known in the usual sense, where thought can label and it can all be watched, label, liked, disliked, wishing it were otherwise, wanting something different, just for a moment, not the idea I'm going to live my life like this every moment, just this moment. of bird song, someone breathing, some numbness in the feet. But as it's seen here, another aspect of this work is coming upon right here what gets in the way of this openness with the possibility of love and affection. What gets in the way? And I don't say that or experience it as a repetitive thought, but something that kind of hovers in the background, so to speak. Almost like an invisible wondering. Tony once put it, and it's a good way to put it, it's as though a switch has been flipped and you can't flip it back. It operates on its own, trying to do the best it can right now looking at this and putting it into words, but because it's the words pointing to something. And because it's helpful, people say, including myself, that it's helpful to have examples, to give examples of things. So, right last night, I was talking, Lisa and I were talking with a good friend here outside, and he had said that, there's going to be some music tomorrow, and he was working on a song, a blues song, and he mentioned the name of it, and then he mentioned the person who wrote it, and I said, he didn't write that. And the brain was trying to go through the files to come up with who this depository here had understood was the author, composer, thank you. And eventually it revealed itself, and I said it, and my friend, he said, well, it wasn't, neither one of us was argumentative about it, but he said, well, some more about why he thought it was this other person. And there was a sense here of like, it was a little bit more than just the factualness of who wrote this song, whatever, but it was a glimmer of, one could say, identification with the knowledge, with being right or whatever. It was seen, and it was just like, and I just said, you know, it doesn't really matter. They all cross-pollinated, which is true with the songs. But the important thing here was seeing that there was that potential movement to this identification. And one can say, well, in this instance, well, so what? But again, it's this switch that's flipped, that to the degree that there's some sensitivity to these movements here, and there's some wondering about it, do we need to hold on to anything for this moment of conversing? Can there be some freedom? I don't know if that's the best word, but to really look and listen. And that's very difficult when we're so identified with what we know, what we've learned, the need to be right, and the sorrow of feeling wrong, made a mistake. Okay, what of it? Well, that might be easy to say if one's a doctor, though, and God forbid there's a mistake made that might have severe consequences. I do not dispute that. Different situations are more or less loaded, one could say, with repercussions. But regardless, through, and we'd have to look at that. I'm open to whatever feedback there is, but it's just sort of an open question here. Would the identification, though, be an added burden to a situation? And making it that much more difficult to sort out what needs to be done in a more factual way. That brings up, in saying this, because this is looking right now, is that there's a talk is not seen here as a final word on anything. It's a looking outward, a looking process outwardly. That makes sense. So the important thing is the looking. Not having an answer, conclusion, advice to do this or not do that. A couple of days ago when I got an email and was asked to give the talk today, and this brain kicks into this mode of, okay, what am I going to talk about? And so a couple of things were jotted down, but there was sort of a leaving it open, what might come up this morning, and actually right before the talk was something to look at. But one of the things that had been jotted down, maybe we'll take just a few minutes, again, not with a final word, but just something to look at, and if it's of interest, and it's the topic of empathy, or a question. And so I looked the word up, and one of the definitions that seemed like a good one is, empathy is the capacity to understand or feel what another person is experiencing from within their frame of reference. The capacity to place oneself in another's position. But in reflecting on that definition before the talk this morning, it was the realization that something was left out. And that is, there is no me and you. Or another way to put it, is no separation. Was that those lines in that John Lennon song, I am me, and you are me, and we are all together? Are we together? Another question. There's been some wondering about whether beyond that no separation really listening, being present with each other, undefended, or watching the defense come up here. There was some wondering whether some experience, similar experience, actually helped with that. It never really occurred to me before, but I'll describe a little bit more what I mean. I was in the locker room at the Y a couple of days ago, and this fella sort of started chatting me up and asked what I, was I working, what did I do, and I said, well, most of my adult life I lived and worked at a meditation retreat center, and I was, oh, well, that's interesting, usually the response, and then I said, and for a few years I helped my wife with a solo medical practice, and mentioning that prompted him to say, well, for 10 years I 24/7 looked after my ailing wife, and described a very tough scene, and yet he wasn't being seeking pity, or he had very up energy, and she was bedridden, and I think it was from she had her legs amputated. What's the name for the diabetes? I think he had said she had diabetes. And then eventually lost sight in one eye. And every day he said, she said, I just don't want to live anymore. And then he described how their friends, and they live in a nice suburb of Rochester, Brighton. Very few of her friends even continued to touch base over that whole period. And I just stood there. And even now, it's just painful to think, to hear what he experienced. And again, he was just relating it very sort of factually. And at the time, he said, there was a feeling right in the chest of sort of, whether you want to say a pain or, and it just felt different than just listening or just being there. It was, well, you know, I said, So I had said to him that, you know, I said, well, it's a really sad story. And I told him that I had recently been with my wife, who went through some surgery, and for 2 out of 3 weeks was just a horror story to live through and be with. And you know, I said to him, it doesn't even, it's no comparison really for what he went through. But again, you know, he was very light about it, and so empathy. Maybe we could, the sense here is just leave it as an open question. There is something in our being with each other when there is some even bit of a shared kind of experience, and the ability to, could we say, understand where someone is coming from. I know Tony, I remembered that Tony actually had said that even though she had met with people, many people over many years who had gone through loss, that it was different after she went through her husband of many years, Kyle's illness and passing. Something had changed for for her, and then I understand a little better maybe what she was saying. So but we can't share all of our experiences. It's just it's impossible. But can there be, for moments at a time, open, caring, affectionate, listening, looking, being with each other or alone? Alone, meaning all one? We will end there.